You know, it really doesn't seem like we've been gone that long, but it was a little bit of a break, I guess. We were in the Virgin Islands and Jamaica, and now we're back in beautiful Iowa with the Buffer podcast. Joel, we didn't go anywhere that exotic. It seems like a lot of people are starting to travel more, and a friend of mine was posting pictures from a boat, and I think they were at like St. John's. I don't even know where that is. Like, it was so fancy.
Virgin Islands.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's like St. Thomas, St. Martin, and
that might be
St. Croix. St. Croix might be in the French Virgin Islands, but you know, it's the last bastion of colonization, the Virgin Islands. You've got the French, the British, and the U.S. Virgin Islands, where I'm sure no one's getting taken advantage of in any way, shape, or form.
I feel like if you're traveling to somewhere with a saint in the name, you're doing okay.
Unless it's St. Louis, which is no shade on the Lou.
Wow.
But
hot take.
No, I'm just saying. Like, there's,
what about
there's,
St. Petersburg?
There's plenty of intercoastal saints.
Sure.
St. Thomas or St. Paul.
Right? That's true. St. Paul is definitely not as warm as St. Martin.
Have you ever been to St. Paul, Minnesota, though?
No.
It's a fantastic city. Like, Minneapolis, St. Paul. I mean, it's cold as hell in the wintertime, but I've got some good friends from my college days who that's where they've landed, and it's summertime. I don't know that you can beat Minneapolis in the summertime because it's cooler than it is here. Minneapolis, further north than Toronto, Canada. So it's not a bad spot in the summertime.
Yeah, we're sitting here recording this on Tuesday, November 23rd, a few days away from Thanksgiving. In the Midwest, the temperatures are fluctuating. There is no snow on the ground. There are a lot of leaves outside my house that I have raked. Our tree did not lose its leaves until last weekend, which is after the city that we live in offers to pick up their leaves.
They're picking up this next week, too. They said they're going to extend it a week.
For everybody?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, wow. That'll save me an email to our public works director pleading for them to do that. But it is inevitable that things will get colder and snowier and icier, and I'll probably fall at some point. But we hope to keep you warm with this week's episode of the Buffer Podcast.
Well, what's and nice is it's Thanksgiving week, so if it's Thanksgiving Day, that's when this is going up live on the podcasts. So maybe it's Thanksgiving right now. You're maybe cooking right now with your earbuds in, or you're traveling home on Sunday on Thanksgiving weekend. But we actually have stuff to talk about, Tony. There's new stuff. We went and saw a movie together in the theater again.
I know, it was wild.
And there's all sorts of good stuff coming out streaming wise as well. And we feel like we're real movie people again. The streaming services are coming out. Holidays are such big times for the movies. And after last year, where there really wasn't much, the studios and the streaming services are really coming out with a bang right now.
Yeah, it was nice to be back.
Can we even battle today? Because there's just so much to talk about.
Yeah, I think I think we can break form and just discuss what we've seen. Because, to your point, you and I saw a movie, and then 2 days prior to that, my whole family and I were at the movies. So it's now that was to see Clifford, which is not good.
But did your kids like it?
It was nice to be. My oldest loved it, yes. And there's a lot of good cameos from people like Horatio Sands and Keenan from SNL. And so that was fine. It was a serviceable movie. It did not give me the same feeling that Ghostbusters Afterlife did, which just felt like this is maybe the most normal movie going experience that I personally have had since December 2020. Was that the last time we would have seen a movie in theaters before everything shut down?
It would have been December 2019.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, because all of 2020 was pandemic. Sorry. So it would have been
everything shut down in January 2020. Yeah, so that's my big takeaway from being at our local theater, was just how good it felt. And I don't know if you had the same experience, certainly could also feel maybe weird, but not in a bad way. But we're just out of habit. I think when you haven't done something in a while, you forget like, oh, I have to wait in line to get a giant pretzel, and I have to pick my seat in the movie. Like, I forgot that you do that because I've been literally picking my seat on my couch watching things on streaming devices. So, but yeah, Ghostbusters Afterlife, that's what we're going to talk about a lot today, but certainly some other things that we've seen. And here's what I'm going to say about it. Jason Reitman, son of Ivan Reitman, great director himself, never really wanted to do a Ghostbusters movie. I think he was even on record saying it was just that type of a big budget movie wasn't something he was interested in. He's done smaller movies that had big impacts, like Thank You for Smoking and Juno.
Up but in the air, man. You got to up in the air might be the best one of all of them.
But then he had this idea, and it was really born out of the story of Egon Spengler, certainly after Harold Ramis passes away. Maybe he even had the idea before Harold passes away. I don't know for sure. But what he was really excited about was just a young person uncovering Ecto-1 in a barn. So Ghostbusters Afterlife, the thing that I'll say is it's a really good movie. There are certainly a lot of things that it draws on from the previous two Ghostbusters movies, because it's a direct sequel to Ghostbusters 2 is what they would tell you, right? So it's a direct sequel to the one from 89. It draws on a lot. There's a lot of nostalgia. And I highly recommend everyone see it in the theater to have that experience. And Joel, it's kind of nice because that's the only place it's at. My wife just asked me tonight, hey, where can we watch Ghostbusters Afterlife? And I said, it's only in theaters. So I think that's what's really helping this succeed at the box office.
And I think we're going to start seeing that more and more. I know, I believe House of Gucci, which comes out this week, is also only going to theaters. And I'm ready for that. I mean, I like being able to watch. Like, I watched, we'll talk about it a little bit, but I watched King Richard at home this week. And I like that option with my busy schedule, especially getting into the holidays. And then for the listeners who don't know, I'm a play-by-play announcer for sports. And so I'm getting into basketball and wrestling season. So I'm going to be in the gym 3 to 5 nights a week starting next week. So being able to watch these things that we're streaming is kind of nice. But it's really enjoyable, though, to just kind of go and sit in that theater and put your phone in your pocket and not have anybody texting you, anybody talking to you. You know, you put it on Do Not Disturb, and away you go. And Ghostbusters was, I think, one of the perfect movies to re-experience that. And I've been to the theater in the last few months, but it was the first, this was like one of the first big movies that I saw, and with the big XL stereo system and the big screen. And it's just, it felt good to watch a movie that was very similar to a movie that I enjoyed so much as a kid. Now, the original Ghostbusters came out in 1984 85. I was 4 years old, so, or I was 3 years old in 1984. So I didn't see it in the theater. I saw it, you know, on VHS or on the, we recorded it off cable and, you know, and watched it that way. But I remember having the Apple IIe Ghostbusters floppy disk, where it was, you, the game was, you waited for the call and then you drove, like, you know, one dimensional, kind of like Atari or pole position. You drove the car and you had to build up to the hearse to Ecto-1. Like, you had like a little small hatchback, and then you just grew up to that, and eventually you got to fight the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. And it was just that was one of the first computer games, video games I ever remember playing. So Ghostbusters has always been there. My brother and I had kick-ass Ghostbuster costumes when we were kids. My dad got us overalls, and my dad worked at a hospital at the time, and so he borrowed he borrowed respirator tubes,
like, oh my gosh,
like just the ones that they, I don't know if they were used and they were going to get thrown away, or they still needed to be like be sanitized, or no, they were definitely sanitized. I remember him pulling them out of the out of the plastic, but he neither bought them or whatever, and he brought them home, and so we had like actual like hoses connected to our proton blasters, wow. And we had walkie talkies, and it was just it was like the, it's probably the only Halloween costume I really remember as a kid, and just a fun franchise.
Yeah. They really did a great job with the originals, merchandising it, and then there was the cartoon. I definitely was a fan of the Ghostbusters cartoon, and then. You know, they've tried.
You know, the cartoon. Do you remember the cartoon? The bad guy that was the boogeyman that was like a recurring.
I think so.
Scared the bleep out of me as a kid. I was so scared of stuff like that. But he was like this recurring villain. Even in the
original movie, I mean, I think we forget. I had some people on social media asking if I thought they should take their kids to see Ghostbusters Afterlife. And I guess the thing that I'll say is if you've seen Ghostbusters, certainly one and two, there are some, I mean, the opening in Ghostbusters in the library, there's a great scare that as a kid, you know, when I saw that, that scared me. So I don't, I'm not in the business of wanting to scare my kids.
No, but it's certainly more work Ghostbusters, for us in the long run.
It is. And I'm just going to say, spoiler alert. So if you haven't seen Ghostbusters Afterlife, spoiler alert, 3, 2, 1. I didn't know how Ghostbusters Afterlife started, and that was kind of nice. I had seen probably all of the trailers that they had done. I was really excited. They had to push it for almost 2 years. Here's the movie, and it opens up with Egon Spengler racing back to his house in the middle of nowhere. But
we don't actually know it's Egon. We don't know it's him.
We
don't ever see.
But we do, I mean, we do know shortly thereafter, but he gets killed in his chair, and then you're just kind of thrust into, we meet his estranged daughter and her two kids who end up really being the stars of the movie. But I wasn't prepared for that being how it opened. It was intense. It set the tone. And I think what's going to surprise a lot of people is just the story and how much heart there is. One of the comments I've seen from critics is the original Ghostbusters in 84 was just hilarious. It was a comedy. Right. You're dealing with like comedy geniuses. Royalty.
Arguably the funniest writer and director of comedy movies in the history of the world is Harold Ramis. Yes. And he's Egon. He's just he's the bonus of the movie. You got Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd here, the two. It's just, it's a comedy.
You know, but it was also had some horror scenes. And like this Ghostbusters Afterlife, like, yeah, there's some very funny moments in it. I'll tell you what, McKenna Grace, who plays Phoebe, is outstanding. She's Egon Spengler's granddaughter, and she does such
Could
a
she
great
look any more
job.
Like Harold Ramis too, with the way they had her hair and the glasses.
So the synopsis is opens up Egon chasing ghosts, get to his house, this contraption he's made doesn't work, goes inside, loses his life in a battle to a ghost, his estranged daughter and her kids get evicted, head out to Oklahoma where they inherit Egon's farm. And they start to find things. And by the way, what I also didn't know was that Egon would be, I don't know if haunting the house is right, but he was kind of guiding his granddaughter to find various things like a ghost trap and the proton pack. And so that was kind of nice to not, I guess, anymore. It's easy to understand plots, and if maybe you're the type of person that wanted to seek that out, you did, but I didn't, and that really felt good to me, Joel. Like I knew kind of what was going to happen as far as, okay, Egon's grandkids, they find stuff. I heard that the original cast was going to show up, but that was it, right? Like that was all that I really knew, and I think that made a big difference in my viewing experience. Was kind of flying a little blind.
See, I always fly blind. I had no idea the original cast show was going to have a cameo and show up. And it's getting easier and easier to be blind going into these things for me, because I just am so busy with some other things. But I like that. I like that surprise. I like to go into to big, high expectation movies with zero expectations. I don't even watch the trailers the same way that you do. I know that you watch, you'll send me clips of like this trailer is dropping and all this, and sometimes I'll watch it, sometimes I'll start it, and if I realize it's going to be really good, I'll stop it because I just don't want, I don't want to. That's just me. That's how I like to consume sure. this stuff, and the way that they introduced the nostalgia factor of it was just absolutely perfect. You know, it was very seamless. It didn't feel like they were shoehorning, you know, all these different things. Even just a quick little exposition phone call between the McKenna Grace character, Phoebe, and Dan Aykroyd, you know, as Ray.
Yep.
You can be a little bit critical of the situation for which that phone call happens, but it helped circle or close that circle and led away for the original cast to find their way back into this movie. So you could definitely tell that Jason Reitman was the right person for this because of the fact that the original two were in his DNA, literally and figuratively. You know, he was on yep. set as a kid with his dad, as his dad directed him. Those guys are family to Reitman. I know Ivan Reitman did a lot of stuff with Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd in their careers. And I think that the only way to reboot this in the current, you know, cinematic environment of how to make movies, he was the right person for the job. And
definitely
because he respected it enough to keep the core value of Ghostbusters and this whole, but also was creative enough to take it a little bit of a new direction.
And I think what's interesting is that this might not be the last time that we see these new characters. Really,
it shouldn't be. If we're going to have 6 yeah. million superhero movies, and if we're going to have all these spinoffs of, you know, Pixar and animation, it's actually probably cheaper to make this type of a movie with CGI effects than it is to make, you know, Encanto, which comes out, you know, next weekend.
Right.
Dollar is going to be similar. So you might as well use a franchise that you can merchandise as well. I mean, I don't know. I've seen Ghostbuster toys in the, you know, the Amazon toy catalogs and the Walmart toy catalogs that have come home. Walmart, holy product placement, Batman, in this movie. They must have paid a good little penny to be featured in this. But so how many people are going to get a mini Stay Puft Marshmallow Man in their stocking this year?
Yeah, listen, they know what they're doing, and it works on a lot of levels. You're doing a bunch of fan service to people our age and older that can now have a shared experience with their own kids, possibly grandkids. What I'll say is it's 2 hours and 4 minutes, Ghostbusters Afterlife. Could they have tightened some things up? Sure. But I refuse to nitpick this movie. That's just an observation that it's 2 hours and 4 minutes. The last 40 minutes are really action-packed. And that's in those moments when you get to see the remaining Ghostbusters show up, and Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray and Ernie Hudson. And there is a really interesting moment where Egon Spengler is brought back to life as a ghost through the power of CGI. And I'm assuming what they did is they had an actor, could have been some practical effects as well, like we saw in Halloween Kills with Dr. Loomis, where it was just an actor that was made up to look like the actor Donald Pleasant. So I don't know if that's what they did for the Egon character. That's kind of my inclination. But yeah, and then what we need to tell people for sure, and hopefully maybe you're listening because you've seen it and you don't mind a spoiler, but did you stay for both credit scenes? So there's a mid-credit scene that happens right after they're listing, you know, special thanks to Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, and then they show you Sigourney Weaver. And I think both Joel and I were like, she's not. And then in a second, they cut to a scene with Peter Venkman and Sigourney Weaver's character, Dana, doing the old guess what's on the card. And Dana is shocking Peter Venkman. It's a fantastic scene. Joel and I were the only ones left in the theaters for the scene that's after the credits, which is a great sequence between Annie Potts's character Janine and Ernie Hudson's Dr. Winston Zeddemore, who has become very successful and wealthy and is seen walking into the old Ghostbusters firehouse, seemingly to have purchased it. And then it ends with the camera zooming in on the old ghost trap machine and a red light flashing, and then it stops. So, and Jason Reitman has said that he has a story. Certainly what that means is they're in business, right? So is Ghostbusters Afterlife going to be successful enough to warrant a sequel? As of today, $64 million at the box office, which is good. And what's encouraging is that their box office numbers from this past Monday, they did about $4 million, Joel. And we're in Thanksgiving week. I'm here to tell you, I know the Disney movie Encanto will be good. I know House of Gucci will do well. I think Ghostbusters will be number one again based on the word of mouth and the repeat viewers.
And I especially also think where what parts of the country are a little bit more open still as far as sure. people feeling more comfortable to go to a movie theater. I know people are doing more and more, but you know, vaccination rates are up and whatever, not getting political. But I definitely think House of Gucci is not going to play as strong as Ghostbusters, you know, in Middle America this weekend. I hope to go see House of Gucci. I don't know that any of the extended family I am with this weekend, if it's if a Ridley Scott, Lady Gaga, and Adam Driver film is necessarily their speed. Yeah. But I'm looking forward to it. It just looks absolutely absurd. And that's kind of what I can't wait to see exactly how absurd it is.
I'll tell you what, my wife's interested. Lady Gaga, Adam Driver. She's all in. 2 hours and 37 minutes, by the way, on your House of Gucci. Jeez Louise, that's a long one.
Well, it's Ridley. That's what he does.
It's true. And how do you feel about Ridley Scott claiming that there is a script complete for a Gladiator sequel? Why? Gut reaction. Don't need it. Why?
Gut reaction. You put don't out need a Gladiator it. First one was two. Perfect. Gladiator right. was perfect.
You put out a Gladiator 2, and suddenly is Gladiator the perfect film that it is? I don't know if I know anyone that dislikes Gladiator.
And you know it's my Gladiator? Favorite movie of all time. Like, it is my favorite yes. movie of all time.
So what is what do we need?
And now I have to change a bunch of passwords because I'm sure that's like a security question. Is it what's your favorite movie? But I'm kidding. That's not. Yeah, I wouldn't actually share that information on a podcast. But
I also will say that Ridley Scott's The Last Duel gets moved to Disney Plus December 1st. Haven't seen it. Want to see it.
Do you know anyone like who Ridley has Scott. Seen it? That's the problem. I mean, I don't know anyone who actually went to go see it.
Ridley Scott's and blaming that failure on, quote, millennials and their love of phones. So I don't know if I agree with that take.
I actually kind of
great interview with Mark Maron on the WTF podcast.
I'll have to check that out because I love Ridley Scott. I can't do the 3-hour podcast very easily, but
it's not that long. It was a very good interview. But here's what I'll say: House of Gucci probably will see it. But honestly, Joel, if my wife wants to go see Ghostbusters Afterlife, I'm gonna go see it again, and I would be okay with that. That's how much I liked it. I would pay
to see it again.
Yeah,
I'd see it again too. Like, I kind of wanted to screen it to see if my kids could handle it. I think my oldest could handle it. Outside of the ghost, who's hilarious, right? What a great way to kind of reintroduce a Slimer-like character with this new iteration. You mean
Muncher voiced by Josh Gad?
Yes, Olaf? Josh Gad. Yes. Yeah.
Right?
We've given Ghostbusters a lot of airtime here, and so Ghost, yeah, it's good.
Let's take a break.
Yes.
And then we'll come back and talk about some other things that we've seen, and I'm playing a game called What's My Laptop Battery Percentage At? For those playing along at home, don't have a charger. It's in my wife's work bag at her job. And my battery is at 17%. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about some other things that we've seen that we think you should check out. So hang tight. And we're back, friends. The Thanksgiving edition of the Buffer Podcast. Glad to be with you. Please rate, review, subscribe, follow us, like, do all the things to support the Buffer Podcast. We appreciate you looking forward to wearing shorts and not having to get dressed up for our kind of low-key Thanksgiving this year. And Joel, the other thing that'll happen for us is kids going to bed, and then it's jumping on HBO Max, Hulu, Showtime, Dexter's back.
I was going to mention Dexter. Dexter's phenomenal.
This season of Curb Your Enthusiasm might be the best. Absolutely hilarious. What I'm getting at, friends, the world of streaming content is bountiful.
Red Notice. Did you watch Red Notice yet with The Rock and Ryan Reynolds?
Let me say that I read reviews of Red Notice.
You've got to stop reading stuff and just experiencing it for yourself.
They said one of the reviews, and I'm not saying that it's right, okay, but it said for like three of the most charismatic and charming people, they have none of that together.
Full disclosure, I fell asleep the first time I watched it, but I'm going to give the fact that I started it at 11 o'clock at night after a long day of work. I'm determined to get sleep.
Red Notice. Yes. Listen, I'm the guy right now, and I don't know if you do this, Joel, and people listening. I've got like Succession started. I've got Dexter, the new season. I'm caught up. Curb, I mentioned that. Tiger King season 2. I keep content hopping, and I don't know if that's a thing.
So
I'm a content hopper.
My bandwidth is really limited right now, so I'm, as far as what I can consume, so I'm kind of focusing less on series. I am watching Dexter. I did finish The Morning Show, which has just taken amazingly weird turns.
I don't know if I love
I think it's jumped the shark already, and I don't know if I can continue.
Can you not adjust The Morning Show so that the last episode is the reveal that Steve Carell's character dies in Italy? And then
that should have been how I flipped it, not midway through.
Go through COVID Street. I don't know. I love The Morning Show.
They're trying to turn it into this network kind of like the movie network. Paddy Chayefsky, big, and I don't love it. But
do we need a season 3 of The Morning Show? I don't know. Are we going to get it?
Contractually, yes. Yeah, I think it's happening. So anyway, so let's talk about. I'm going to talk about focus on four things that I really, really have enjoyed the last 10 days, 15 days. First thing, I'm just going to barely touch on it, but I could do a whole podcast on this limited release series on Hulu, which was called Dope Sick with Michael Keaton.
Ooh, so good.
I have never been so angry, so relieved, and so gobsmacked by a topic. And I'm a former athlete who's had a lot of injuries and a lot of surgeries. And I watched it and I said to my wife, I'm so thankful that in 2002, when I had my first shoulder surgery, when this drug was really getting a grip on people, my father, who's a physical therapist, wouldn't let me fill the prescription.
Wow.
Because he had talked to some friends in the business and the orthopedic surgeons and stuff, who just said, this thing seems scary. I don't believe that it can do what they promise it can do. And the topic of breakthrough pain, I get so angry when I watch this show and listen to how they marketed and how they prayed and how Purdue Pharma just were absolute monsters. And it's something I've studied. I'm not just going off of the information that this one voice of this Dope Sick TV show did. But it was so well acted. It was so well constructed. I think it would be really easy to weave in and out of these multiple storylines and really fall apart, and they did that very nicely. And at the end of the day, the Sacklers are the devil, allegedly. I don't want to get sued, but apparently they have no morality or culpability for their actions, and now the Supreme Court has said they can't be, you know, actually taken down individually. It's just a mess, and I get the law side of it, but my God, if someone gives you a prescription to OxyContin, don't fill it. It is heroin. That's all it is. And it's one of the most addictive things ever. It's I
can't remember what I had after my knee surgery.
You probably had hydrocodone.
I didn't like it. I didn't like how I felt at all. I took it. I took one pill, and I was like, I'd rather just take the boring stuff. So
I've had physicians who are close family friends. I've seen them weep at my parents' dinner table because they felt like they killed one of their patients by prescribing this drug.
Holy.
Because the person had addiction issues and overdosed. They didn't overdose on the actual drug. They overdosed on actual, you know, heroin. But it's just, so Dope Stick, extremely powerful. I recommend it highly. But I've never been so, like, angry and ready to just, like, quit my job and go be an activist for this. I mean, it's just such a big thing, in my opinion. And the opioid epidemic is real, and we got to pay attention to it and watch your family members if they're ever subscribed or prescribed pain medicine. So
Dope,
that's
Sick. Dope Sick on Hulu. Dope AF.
Yeah,
that's my take.
The next thing, a little bit more fun. Tick Tick Boom, the Jonathan Larson musical on Netflix. Fantastic. Just fantastic. And I know you have your issues with musicals, and I'm hoping to
I just have a hard time when all of a sudden.
So this is why I think you'll like this one, because this thing is constructed in a way that it's not we're talking in dialogue, and now we're singing all of a sudden. This is the framework of this is actually Jonathan Larson's composition process and his creative process. So the times that there's actually like bursting into song are him actually like presenting a composition that he's written to an audience, trying to get his musical sold, trying to get discovered. So it's a lot more practical. It's not as much. There are some dreamish type things where, you know, he and his roommate are talking about moving up to a nicer apartment, and it is kind of a song and dance number, but it feels more like the Zoe's Extraordinary playlist type thing where you clearly are transformed into a dream that they're saying. It's not reality and they're singing to each other, if that makes sense. I felt like they did a really good job of bridging that hurdle that so many people have, where it's like, I'm supposed to be in this practical world, and then all of a sudden people are bursting into song and dancing. I highly recommend it. The music is outstanding. Andrew Garfield, I think, is going to get nominated for an Academy Award for this. Wow. Tony, I think he's that good.
Wow.
It's Lin-Manuel Miranda's directorial debut. I know he's a polarizing figure on this podcast, especially if our buddy Mike Bridenstine was on. I've got actually a text from him today about if I've checked out the latest Lin-Manuel Miranda vehicle. And the answer, of course, was yes. But Tick, Tick, Boom, if you're not familiar with the Jonathan Larson story, also, you know, we talked about Adam Driver a little bit with House of Gucci. Underrated character actor, you know, because he's been, you know, the big bad in the new Star Wars movies. Just a great actor and a great character actor. And I think that's why House of Gucci is appealing for his role in that. Marriage Story is fantastic. So in Tick, Tick, Boom, Richard Kind shows up and plays a great, great Broadway producer. That's kind of
awesome.
Despicable.
Also in the new season of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Right. But what steals the show is I want you, before you go watch Tick, Tick, Boom, I want you to go on YouTube and YouTube Stephen Sondheim and like watch some of his master classes, like just or quick interviews with Stephen Sondheim. Watching that, and I'll speed this up here. Watch Stephen Sondheim enough to kind of get a feel for how he speaks, how he moves, how he thinks and communicates. And then go watch Tick, Tick, Boom, and you will see what I believe is one of the finest performances I've ever seen of someone emulating a real-life person as Bradley Whitford as Stephen Sondheim in Tick, Tick, Boom. It completely blew me away how much he nails such an iconic character in musical theater. So Tick, Tick, Boom, see it. It's on Netflix.
Tick, Tick, Boom on Netflix. Also, Tick, Tick, Boom, Dope AF.
but
Dope AF.
The two
I'm
things
sorry, are, I meant
Dope AF. The two things, you know, it's not cheesy music. Jonathan Larson and kind of was
spoiler
a...
Spoiler alert, he dies.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, he doesn't die in this movie, per se. Well, yeah, I guess he does. But I'm trying not to spoil a lot.
Also, spoiler alert, Andrew Garfield not in Spider-Man No Way Home. JK, they're just hiding him in the trailer.
Anyway.
Number three.
King Richard. Everyone says Will Smith's going to win an Academy Award, finally, for King Richard. The story of Richard Williams, Venus, and Serena Williams' father. I watched this movie and I thought, gosh, Will Smith is good at his job. But I also thought, oh my God, he's not the best actor in this movie. The two girls, Venus and Serena, and his wife, to me, blow him off the screen. And I'm not being critical of Will Smith. It's a great performance.
Yeah.
It is a great performance.
But, so once HBO Max, my account stops acting stupid, I'll watch it. And of course, Will Smith has been in my life for a long time.
And it's such a great story. The Williams sisters... I have a lot of respect for them.
He's not necessarily overshadowing it. People will just be surprised at how good the actresses that play Venus and Serena are.
I think Richard Williams, his wife. Well, Richard Williams is a tough character too because he's kind of an overbearing dad. Like it's kind of a Joe Jackson kind of in control of everything, not abusive like Joe Jackson was. Michael Jackson's dad, Jackson
allegedly.
5.
Just kidding.
I'm pretty sure that's well documented. But Richard Williams, you know, he had a plan and he did a great job. His daughters. He focused a lot of core values that are really important to them and the family and the mom. I think it was really the tie that binded everything together. Really good movie, really good story. And it's a great performance. I just kind of wanted to, I'm not just trying to be contrarian, but I knew Will Smith is going to get all sorts of award nominations for this, and he should. But I do think that the other three ladies in that film did a just as good of, if not better job.
And before we started, you said King Richard in theaters and on HBO Max, and then you said King Richard dope AF.
Right.
So that's three callbacks for those listening.
A little segue from the first thing we talked about with Dope Sick. This is a documentary that was the best thing that I have watched in the last 2 weeks on HBO. Part of their new Music Box series. I think they have one on DMX coming out Thanksgiving night. And then there's I think there's one on Kenny G next week, which is really, really interesting. I'm
perfect.
Yeah. But this, it's called Jagged, based off of Jagged Little Pill. It's a documentary on Alanis Morissette. And I forgot how much of a juggernaut that album is. Every single track, I think, hit the top 10 on the Billboard charts at some point in its existence.
33 million copies sold, Joel. 33 million.
She is just a fascinating person. If she started out a child actor, she was on You Can't Do That on Television, which is a show I watched religiously as a kid in Canada. And then she was kind of this mall Debbie Gibson pop star. And... was really had kind of a rough go of it. I mean, had an eating disorder, was taken advantage of sexually, honestly. I mean, she was statutorily raped several times in her life. And they address all these kind of darkness and these were tough issues. But, you know, most documentaries, they focus sometimes so much on the negative. But this was really bad. This woman's a badass musician. She is she took control of her life. She took control of her career and she hired her band. Do you know who her drummer was? Her first drummer for her band on the record?
I don't.
Taylor Hawkins, the Foo Fighters.
Wow.
He hooked up with the Foo Fighters because the Foo Fighters opened for Alanis Morissette on that tour.
That's amazing.
And so it was just crazy how she went out and she hired a band all on her own. She worked with Glenn Hansard, who's, you know, a legend in the songwriting community. But he was the only
Glenn
one.
Glenn Ballard?
Or Glenn Ballard, I mean, yeah. Who's Glenn Hansard?
Isn't he the dude that's like in that duo? He's an Irish singer.
Yes, he's Falling Slowly or whatever. That's who that is.
Glenn Ballard Just go to Wikipedia, yeah. Type in Glenn Ballard.
Yeah, just an absolute just juggernaut as well.
Unbelievable, the things he's done and the songs he's co-written.
Just, like, and he says, I've got a co-write. He gets a co-writing credit, but basically he just said, I sat down, I'd throw out a couple chords, and then all of a sudden she would just write this amazing song. And, you know, one take, be done. And it's just... And Alanis,
she's a fascinating individual. How old is Alanis Morissette?
I think she's like 50.
She is 47.
Yeah. So yeah, she's only 7 years older than me.
When Jagged Little Pill,
she was like 19, 20. She was like 19 or 20. So
Pickles. Jagged Little Pill comes out
95.
June of 95.
I remember buying it. I remember listening to it in my CD. I was in eighth grade, going into eighth grade, and I just remember I was, you know, classically trained, yada, 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 all this stuff, taking voice lessons, you know, learning to be an opera singer at a young age. But that, I remember that was the first record, and I believe it was it Perfect, was the first song that I was like, okay, you can kind of sing cool stuff, even if you're a guy, like you can sing things with edginess, but still be, you know, artistic. And I'm not going to say she was a huge influence on me, but it was one of the first, like, because I didn't like Nirvana and Pearl Jam. I liked it, but it wasn't it didn't speak to me. Like, I honestly, like, Alanis Morissette, that record was one of the best records, and it spoke to both guys and girls. And that's why it sold so many. It was just a phenomenal piece of music history. And this documentary does a fantastic job of telling that story.
We've talked on this podcast before just about how many great pieces of content, music, movies, TV shows were birthed into the world in 94 to 96. And specifically, if you look at 1995, just a couple of releases that came out, Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness, the epic double CD from the Smashing Pumpkins, which is just phenomenal. My mom did not let me go see the Smashing Pumpkins in 1994. I was 11. She thought I was too young. My cousin Warren, who is the same age, got to go see them. So thanks, Mom. Just a little bitter about that. I would later see the Smashing Pumpkins at the Adler Theater in Davenport in 2009. Other things from 95, you've got the Bends from Radiohead.
So Radiohead opened. Radiohead opened for her on tour. And they have got footage of that where they're sound checking and they're doing like a 2-hour sound check. And Taylor, the drummer, says, and then we realized a couple years later that they were writing Computer during their sound checks.
That is outstanding.
So they were using that stage time and that mic time and that studio time.
I really think somebody should just do, and maybe I know there's been different things done, and I'm not the king of just dwelling in the past, but like, where is the long form podcast that just talks about what happened from 90, let's even just say like 93 to 97? So much. And that's not to say that there hasn't been and there will not continue to be good content, but wow, it was just a juggernaut of a time period. So I will probably check out Jagged.
It's a must. Like, I'm telling you.
You said that's on HBO Max, yeah. And then you said Jagged Dope AF. Is that what you said?
But it's just,
you said it was so good.
Yes, it was so good. And
that's exciting.
I know we usually do our bits at the end. I just want to say thanks, everyone, for subscribing and liking this podcast. I know we do usually do some funny stuff at the end, but we're in time of Thanksgiving. We're getting into the holidays. I encourage you all to just spend as much time with the people you love as much as you can.
And talk about politics.
I work a block away from the homeless shelter in Muscatine, Iowa, where we were recording this podcast. And when I'm walking to work every day, the school bus is stopped in front of the homeless shelter. And there are kids, you know, who have to get to school and they ride the bus. And I know that we focus a lot on charity at this time of year, and I encourage people to do that, but I encourage you to do that year round. And I really encourage you to look into the home and housing insecurity problem in your community, because I can guarantee you it exists. And we have a crisis in this country of housing insecurity and affordable housing. And I'm not talking about cheap housing. I'm talking about affordable housing where it's quality, but people can still afford to live and you know, get groceries. And in our community, I believe the statistic is 30% of the population spends more than 60% of their monthly income on rent or mortgage. And we've got to work on how to lower that number in our communities, because that is, I believe, one of the best ways to improve economic impact in our country. And it's an apolitical thing. It has nothing to do with either side of the political aisle. So I encourage you, if you're looking for a cause to support in your community, look at housing insecurity. Call your city agencies, your municipal county, your housing urban development programs to see where there are philanthropic opportunities in your community to combat homelessness and housing inequality in your community.
Yeah. And vote for Joel in the midterm elections, because he is going to make the world kind.
I don't know if I can do that. I'm not always the kindest. I just want people to be able to live. And
yes. Yes. And also, my kids will be very reluctant to eat turkey. So I just want to normalize for people that will also probably be ordering a pizza from some place that is thankfully open on Thanksgiving, because I refuse to force my kids to eat things that maybe they're reluctant. Like, try it.
I love turkey.
But then I'm not going to be the dad that's like, now I will probably be the dad that is sawing logs. The tryptophan just knocks me out.
It's not necessarily tryptophan, it's the caloric coma that we all go in.
Sweet.
I know your battery is dying.
I apparently snore very loud. And of course it's not true, but that's the allegations. So what better than to just eat turkey, maybe have a cocktail or two,
and watch Andy Dalton against Tim Doyle in the Bears-Lions game.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles with Steve Martin and John Candy.
Those aren't pillows, Tony.
It's such a classic. I will say, in future episodes, I have found where some of your favorite holiday Christmas movies are going to live. I was surprised to see one place that has a lot more than I even could fathom. So we'll talk more about that on future episodes of The Buffer. Go see Ghostbusters Afterlife. Wowzers. Afterlife. And support your local theaters and check out all the good things streaming on a smart device near you. And happy Thanksgiving, everybody. I want to say, I'm at 3% battery life. I'm so thankful that we made it to the end of this podcast. And if you made it to the end with us, please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Peace.
Until next time, goodbye, everybody, and happy Thanksgiving. Oh no, the screen's getting dark.
And we're gone.